This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
It is hour number four of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic day as we're rocking and rolling here on a Tolo Tuesday. Cowboys have an off day before they go try to save the season against the Detroit Lions. They will attempt to do something very difficult in sports, which is remaking who you are in the middle of a season. And so far, by definition, the Cowboys have been a very inconsistent team and a team that can show up and lose to any team any given week. You know, it used to be a thing with Jason Garrett coached football teams that, oh, yeah, they wouldn't beat the good teams. But against the bad teams, they're just, oh, yeah, they're knocking every one of these out of the park. You know, they beat who they have to beat. They don't have any big disappointments.
Most of them.
That Jets game and then the close calls against Miami and New York. I don't think there's any game you can go into it and be like, oh, yeah, Cowboys are going to win this one. And so that brings us to the Detroit Lions game with Jeff Driskel. Just how bad are they? They obviously have a pretty dang good defense. Even though they traded away one of their best defensive backs, Quandre Diggs, the Seahawks made a play last night. Might want to hang on to that guy. And outside of the absence of Matthew Stafford, they do have a lot of good offensive personnel. But what do you expect from Jeff Driskel? Paint the picture here for us, Jeff, as practice will resume at the Ford Center at the Star tomorrow.
Nothing good from Jeff Driskel. He was actually, here's his numbers from the game. He completed just under 60% of his passes for 269 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. So, not bad for a backup quarterback, but
it's capable of beating the Cowboys.
I tell you what, I didn't get into this. Maybe I'll touch on it at 5:40 because I didn't get to the Cheeto part of the tape breakdown. I don't like the matchup of Cheeto against either Kenny Golladay or Marvin Jones.
I don't like him against NFL wide receivers.
Right. You throw to a big guy down the field that can go get it, and Cheeto will not find the ball. He's going to pray that he times it properly, and while staring at your chest, gets his hand between your hands. And you saw how that worked against a big guy in Kyle Rudolph, who I believe afterwards stared him dead in the eyes and called him a little boy.
Yeah.
That's
a humiliating moment.
Yeah. So, look, they're too inconsistent. They don't play up to their capabilities. So, if you think the Lions are going to beat them, I can't fight you too hard. I anticipate them beating the Jeff Driskel-led Lions.
Isn't it safe to say at this point, or fair to say at this point, that if you did not heed the warnings that happened in New Orleans, Green Bay, New York Jets game, if you didn't look at those massive disappointments and say, guys, we got to get focused. You know, it's like a great basketball team. Lakers against the Pistons in the finals. Surely the Lakers, they're down 2-0. They're gonna flip the switch now, right? Because they're champions and they're better and they've decided this is unacceptable. So we got to flip this switch. It rarely happens. We talk about it all the time in sports, and surely sometimes it does. But it's usually because a trade, a coach got fired. It's not that a bunch of underachievers after 60% of the season is over decided as a matter of pride they were just going to become the team that everybody expected them to be.
I do think they're going to dominate the Detroit Lions, and here's why. And it's unfortunate because this is who the Dallas Cowboys are. They're only motivated through somewhat losing. Now, I know that it took them three losses to get there and be motivated to play their best game of the year, but they can't handle success. If they're successful for 2 weeks in a row, I mean, they're diddling themselves and they can't, it's just like, oh my God, a game started again and we're down 14-0.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think after that tough loss, that they're going to come out and they're going to play great football and feel like we are so awesome, and then they're going to have to take on the Patriots.
I agree, man. That pattern has emerged for sure, and that's the pattern of a good team. They can flip that switch, and the losses do motivate them.
Yeah, so I expect a 14-20-point victory from the Cowboys, and it's just the way it is because it's just like, see, we can do it. We can be great, but they really can't. They're not motivated enough. They don't have the leadership from the top person, Jerry Jones, down to actually really want. It takes a lot to I won't say it takes a lot to want. To want something's very easy. To put everything into getting that championship takes so much that the Cowboys are not willing to put in that effort and that work.
I agree with you with this year's team for sure. You know, I think other years maybe they've had the resolve or the focus as a roster, but other factors held them back, or maybe it just wasn't their year. But I totally agree with you about this year that the focus, the determination so far isn't there. Now, it is sports, and we are human, and sometimes you can get laser-focused by something. Something happens, or a moment in practice galvanizes a team, and everybody comes together. But at this point, I don't expect it to happen, and I'm not convinced that they're going to go up to Detroit and get a victory. And I'll tell you why. It comes down to entitlement. And as humans, you know, we get conditioned to things and start expecting success. And, you know, you go to divorce court, and if your wife has been living with you for 20 years and you've been making a boatload of money, the judge will actually decide that she's entitled to still get half of your money, you know. And all sorts of things throughout our society, you know, reflect the potential for entitlement. And I think with the Cowboys, absolutely entitlement's a huge factor. I think I participate in it. I feel like when the Cowboys start a game, even if they go down, I believe they're going to come back and win. Even down 14, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, these fans of the other team, they're happy right now. But fast forward an hour, you'll see what's happening. The Cowboys are coming for you. I feel that sort of overconfidence or just determined belief that things are going to work out for the Cowboys, and it's completely misplaced. It's just part of being around the Dallas Cowboys football culture. I think that breeds that sort of expectation.
Yeah, and if they don't beat Detroit, I think that would be the end of Jason.
Very well could be.
If you go to 5-5, and I don't know, maybe Matt Stafford's back is magically fixed and they play and it's a close game and you could lose to Detroit and just go on with the season. Because I don't think they are going to fire a coach midseason, even if they were going to. But if you went to 5-5 and lost to a backup in Detroit, maybe that would change.
Wouldn't you still be the best team in the NFC East?
Maybe. Eagles are the Patriots, right? Patriots,
so you'd still be the best team. I mean, you are considered one of the best teams in the NFL because you're winning your division.
They could justify it. You know, I think it would be like 50-50 in my mind. Like, is Jason Garrett going to be the coach when we wake up?
I guess I just go off of what I would consider to be common sense. I would look at my head coach after that game and I'd say, hey, last week there were a lot of factors directly related to coaching that cost us the football game. And this week we lost to a backup quarterback and we're a 500 team with the best offense in football. That's a problem. I don't know how to get around. Like the fair catch, kicking a 57-yarder on the opening drive of a game. Jason Garrett's kicked two of the four longest field goals to open a game in the history of the league. Mm. Like, you're coaching scared. You're not having your team prepared on the punt return. You're not having the team prepared on what we should do when we're down there trying to win the game. And now we've lost to a backup quarterback on a below-average football team. What reasons do you have that I should keep you?
No, I totally agree. You know, the Jets game, which could have been rock bottom, you were hurt, right? But this game, it's like, man, we're pretty much healthy outside of Connor Williams, and you lose to the Lions. Plus, on top of that, at 5-5, you lose. I think you put Jason Garrett, throw him out of the equation. You still have a chance to accomplish your dreams if you can put a giant foot up your team's collective keister. You know what I'm saying? And firing the coach is your only chance of doing that 10 games in.
I believe that would work. I'm not saying it would go to championship working this year, but you would get the most out of this team if you fired Jason Garrett and played the last seven games without him. I don't care who the head coach is. I you could say we don't even have a head coach. We're just letting
anybody.
Kellen is an offensive coordinator and Chris Richard's defensive coordinator, and we don't even have a head coach. We're going to try this for the first time ever to not even.
Jerry.
I think it would be better. Because the players would say, oh my gosh, I think that they really do care up there. And there is an Autoflex Leasing fan text. I know we're getting a lot in, but, and this is a valid point from the 682, Mike, we can't want something more than the team does. When I talk about wanting to possibly have a championship more than the Dallas Cowboys.
That's not true.
And yeah, fans often do.
I don't think that's true at all. I do think it's true with some teams. I do think some teams become so tight and so together, and they want something so bad that there's no way that we can want it more. I'll give you an example of that. I think the Washington Nationals down the stretch, when they got off to a horrible start, talking about a team that flipped it around 19-31.
Yeah, there you go.
Best record in Major League Baseball ever since that 50-game start that they had. But they came together, and they came together as we want this really bad. And for some of those guys, it might be their last time to ever play on that team. And I don't think the Cowboys have that attitude at all. It's more like, hey, you guys need to take a chill pill type of Jordan Lewis deal. Like, I don't know what you guys are so upset with. We're over 500 and we're winning our division. How could you not be anything but ecstatic about how great we are?
I know. Yeah, that comment by Jordan Lewis, and don't get me wrong, I'm not going to get in a battle with Jordan Lewis at all. I have a ton of respect for him, and I, you know, respect his perspective on what it is. But I wonder, you know, that statement, y'all are lame for panicking, is that a reflection of guys who don't recognize the massive opportunity that is sitting here staring them in the face and how it's going away? Yeah. Like the salary cap and how many good players you have on this team compared to the future. Like, this is it. Maybe you can squeeze 95% of the talent you have this year into next year's salary cap, but 2021, it's done.
And to make this clear, I did not have this attitude as a player about myself or about my team. This is as a fan of the Cowboys or the Mavericks or the Rangers, but just – It's one of these things where I do feel like I have a good idea of reading a team and how together they are, they truly are pulling for something. And I don't think this Cowboy team is pulling. And the other thing too, Jordan Lewis, this is where I was going with this, Gavin. He doesn't understand the history of the NFL either. And I get it, because you don't want to have a failure attitude. When you don't get the bye over the last 5 to 6 years of the NFL, you don't make the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate thing is to win it. And you shouldn't say, well, they can't win the Super Bowl if you're a player on the team or a coach on the team, because you've pretty much lost every chance to get home field advantage and a bye in the playoffs. But those are facts, Jordan Lewis, on where you're at. Is it's going to be close to impossible to actually reach your goal if you have team goals.
Okay, good stuff there. We'll get to Jerry's thoughts on the Ian Rappaport report about Dak Prescott's contract coming up here in about eight or nine minutes, next segment. What are we witnessing with the Mavericks' second-best player is a very legitimate topic of conversation. As the Mavs lost to the Celtics last night, it featured a great game by Luka, which was outstanding, but a forgettable game by Porzingis. So what are we seeing? Is his anxiety about his performance making it worse? Like, is he sitting there thinking and starting to press, and now you get the 1-for-11 with 4 points in only 20 minutes, and he's off the floor now? Is Rick Carlisle starting to see how frustrations can make things deteriorate further?
It could be, but that Boston Celtics team is one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. They can put a lot of pressure on you with Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and other guys that make the game tough. And so I think frustration set in after missing, his first 3 or 4 shots. I know I think he only made one shot.
Yeah, one of 11.
That frustration didn't start. I think it set in with how physical they were being on him. And then when he wanted to somewhat take the easy way out, the shots didn't go in. And then when he wanted to be a little bit tough, you know, his elbow would hit somebody and it'd be another foul. And then guys were getting and ones on him that aren't really that good of a player. It all bubbled into a horrible game for him, but I don't think he's frustrated with the Mavs. I personally
no, he's not frustrated with the Mavs. He's frustrated with himself.
Yes, but I don't think that's going to lead him down a black hole the rest of this season. I think he's going through a tough stretch to start the year. Just like I think Steph Curry is better. Seth Curry is better than what he's showing through 10 games. I don't think we signed a guy who can't play in the NBA anymore, but Seth is having his tough start, and Porzingis means a lot more. But I don't know when he's going to come out of it, Gavin, because he sat out almost 2 years of playing competitive basketball.
Yeah, if I was him, I would be giving myself like to the All-Star break. Oh, man, I didn't have my best stuff. It takes a while to get sharp, adjust to the speed, get all of your instincts refined. Like last week he was talking about, I'm not paying enough attention and guys are knocking the ball out of my hands. It's because he's having to think too much instead of just react. He's essentially having to go back through a rookie process And that's it's very tough when you've already made it to the top.
It has to be frustrating for him, too, because he came into the league about the same time the Greek Freak did, and they were compared to each other. And a year and a half ago, before the injury, people were still going, I'm not sure who's exactly better. Like, people were starting to lean Greek Freak's way, but that's how close Porzingis was. And so now to see maybe, like, guys like he was compared to be league MVPs and everything, and for him to be struggling, it probably is really frustrating, but I think he'll get over it. I just don't know when.
Yeah, I just hope he uses the frustration to fuel solutions and not more frustration. Yeah. We'll continue to watch that. They will be in New York Thursday night.
Yes.
That could be messing with him. You know, this started when the New York reporters were in town to talk to him after the Orlando game. So maybe that put him back in the mindset of, you know, reflecting on things and, you know, being frustrated around those New York media guys who are all out to get him. But he did get dominated by several Boston smaller players. They go really tiny. I think Danny Ainge believes my solution. Like, you get role player big men who are budgets. Like, we'll take Enes Kanter and that Taco Fall guy and some other guy named Bob Williams. You know, those are our bigs.
Yeah.
And we're going to dominate the perimeter and get in transition and play awesome defense.
That's going to be a fun team come the end of the year. Heck, they beat us in... Jason Tatum, who I think we both really like, was even worse than Kristaps Porzingis.
Was he 1 for 18
or
something?
Yeah, 1 for 18.
Yeah, that's what Porzingis needs to look at. Like, dude, it's fine. You know, star players don't score double digits every game. It's cool. Unless you're Jordan or something. Michael Irvin is going to join the KNC Masterpiece tomorrow at 11:40. So we're looking forward to the playmaker. Get his thoughts on everything Cowboys tomorrow. But coming up next, we'll get you some Jerry highlights, including what he had to say about a report that the Cowboys and Dak are heading for the franchise tag. Well, I gotta tell you, the Jerry Jones interview this morning with Sean Sharif, it was Pat Doney in for RJ Choppy, and it was outstanding. You know, after a loss like that, there are so many different topics, and I think they pretty much covered them all. Let's do a radio.com rewind on this audio. You can go back yourself with the radio.com app and go right to the very beginning of that interview or the beginning of any hour or any segment that you might have missed throughout the day on 105 Through the Fan. That's only with the radio.com app. Segment is brought to you by Fort Worth Community Credit Union. Fort Worth! The Texas Kent Academies and the Frankels. Hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel and Frankel, 214-333-3333, or go online to frankelfirm.com. And they asked him about the Ian Rappaport NFL.com report that Dak and the team are heading for the franchise tag. Here was Jerry's answer.
He has no idea, because I would be the only one that knows whether he's right or wrong. And I can tell you, he has no idea.
So, yeah, going after Ian Rappaport's stuff there a little bit. And I do believe that it's headed that direction, but I just thought it was entertaining that, you know, Jerry Jones going after a senior NFL writer and a guy who operates here locally, so we might be listening to those shots fired at him.
They could both be right.
Yeah.
Rappaport could absolutely be right that this is headed towards the franchise tag, and it could absolutely look like it's headed toward the franchise tag until it's not.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jerry's right because he knows exactly what his offer is and what the other offer, what Dak's team's offer is.
But Jerry might think, surely Dak's going to do a deal at 33, and Ian's over there talking with the NFL Network, the CAA agents, and they're like, there's no way we're getting a deal done.
Right.
Jerry thinks we're coming down to 32 or 33.
Right. And like a lot of media members, he could absolutely be being used by an agent or a team and saying, nope, it's not going to get done, to get the other side to move, because that's using the media for your purposes, which is what teams and agents do a lot.
Man, that's one of the really frustrating things about sports, isn't it? It's like, do you want to go get a source and then take your information from him because now you're at the control of his or her narrative? Or do you just want to read things and base your judgments off of people's actions?
You had to guess. You had to do some guessing.
Either way, you're kind of... Okay, cut number two here. Did you have an issue with the final run plays on second and third down there on the second to last drive for the Cowboys?
We all can make our play calls in our minds. That's the beauty of our game, and that each of us get to do that, and we get to do it after the play is run. And the coaches do it, the players do it, they all do it. I like the fact that we had a form of run pass option on the goal line. I thought that was the ticket. Let Dak sit there and option that thing to some degree. I think that's what we were – I don't have to think it. I know that's what we were trying to do on the goal line.
Okay, so I think there's a couple of really interesting things here. The first one is that I agree with Jerry, and I don't think it's fair as critics to say, well, you should have called just a pure pass, right? Because I think that does go to second guessing. But at the same time, it's the organization's perspective or opinion that, what are you guys talking about? Our center and guard just got blown up. That's the reason we lost. You want to make it about the play calling, but our center and guard, you can clearly see on film right here. And it's like, well, yeah, that's one play out of 65.
Right.
You know, maybe you wouldn't have been in that situation if you hadn't ran yourself into a 2-touchdown deficit in the first half again.
Yeah, there was a chance to put up 40 in that game.
Yeah.
And that should have been their goal. That's one of my big problems with Jason Garrett. You guys approached this game as if 20 points was going to win. That's the only way you can explain, like, yes, you can line up for a 57, 61, 62-yard field goal if it's the end of the half, because that doesn't come with risk. There's no risk there.
Mm.
We're going to try, and if we make it, awesome. If we don't, if it's way short, we might have to tackle a guy. There's 11 of us waiting to do it. But in that moment, you are risking giving up outstanding field position for a low percentage kick, which means you think those 3 points are going to be that valuable to the outcome of the game. You played it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You
played the whole game wrong.
I mean, not going for it on fourth and four at the
fourth
opponent's
40-yard
line.
Fourth and four on the opponent's 40-yard line.
Yeah, with your passing game being what it is. Yeah, you know, I just think the strengths of this team have shifted in a way. And the play calling's not acknowledging. They're still like, we got to shorten the game. Like an offensively challenged NBA team will be like, dude, we got to slow it down, right. Take the air out of the ball. We only want to have 90 possessions because then they can't run away with the game. If it's a 120 possession game, their efficiency is going to blow us out of the water. But if we shorten the game, then maybe we'll be within a score or a score and a half and be able to make a last minute shot to go ahead. And you don't have to do that when you have an elite passing game.
No.
When you have a rookie quarterback or an aging quarterback who's losing his arm and his ability to stay healthy, yeah, go ahead. You know, shorten the game. Try some tricks. But when you're as explosive as they are, there's no reason for it.
Do you guys believe this is the best offense Jason Garrett has had since he became offensive coordinator / head coach?
Ooh.
I'm going to say yes. I'll answer my own question because I had my answer.
Yes,
I
agree.
I think this is the best offensive team he's ever had, including those Romo times, and I'm not taking a shot at Romo. He was good, and he had T.O. at some points and a Hall of Fame Jason Witten when he was good at football. But I think this is probably his best offensive team he's ever had, and he doesn't seem to want to truly take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Okay, and I don't know. I can't differentiate too much. I want to know what 2014 would have looked like if they'd really revved it up. But they were going with DeMarco Murray, you know, 375 touches. I think that one could have rivaled this one pretty good. Okay, would you have wanted to see the ball in Dak hands more was cut number three. Here's more of Jerry with Sean and Pat Doney this morning.
I want us to be able to get it in there. How many times have we seen Dak keep it and take it in and run it in for the score? How many times have we seen him pull it and throw it back to the open receiver or tight end? I like that option down there on that goal line rather than just a straight called handoff or a straight called pass play.
Yeah, that's more on that RPO, and, you know, I think that's really sharp. You know, I think that's got to be the future of the game when it comes to your quarterback, because it allows you to make an adjustment after the ball's already in play. And if the defense wants to come up, sure. Ideally, though, it wouldn't be Jason Witten trying to beat an all-pro safety as
yeah,
your one passing opportunity.
Probably not the matchup that you're looking for, but that was the option they gave him.
And then your center got pretty whooped on that play, didn't he?
I believe it was your left guard got pretty whooped on that play.
All right.
And by pretty well, he split them, so one of them got destroyed on that play.
How are we with the very uncomfortable progress report on where Travis Frederick is? It feels like some games he's back to the old Trav.
I thought he was getting better and better as the season went on, and it kind of culminated last week where he played really well. And then this week, it's weird because I don't think he was physically bad. Physically, he was fine. They got beat by mental mistakes. They got beat by guys not realizing who's supposed to let this guy go and who's supposed to block this linebacker. They got, which that one's going to go to Jason Garrett's. They didn't execute, but, and it was from guys that when you're watching them block, you can use your common sense because you see, okay, there's six defenders and the right tackle got that guy. The right guard went straight to that guy without a double team. So clearly they know where they're going. This one, clearly you two have those two. And the way it looks is like Frederick should have be the guy going to the linebacker, but he doesn't. So it's like, that's weird that I believe you're the center's usually the smartest guy on your offensive line. It was weird that multiple times I was like, is Travis Frederick doing the wrong thing?
That is interesting. Yeah, because he is known for having a full understanding of everybody's job and a guy that could help even the quarterback because of his experience. Okay, has cut number four. Here's Jerry's thoughts on what's been a big topic the last 2 days and really the last couple of weeks. Has that Zeke's performance been disappointing for Jerry Jones? Here was his answer.
I think he's one of two or three of the best backs in the league. He can do a lot of things for us out there, does a lot of things for us. The week before against the Giants, he was outstanding in terms of his production. It didn't work out that way. But, look, I want us to have a better day than we had Sunday. I knew going into that game, just as everyone knew, that Minnesota was going to be a handful for us. They're a good team. And they're particularly good, and Mike Zimmer and his staff particularly good defense on defense. And so it was a challenge. We didn't underestimate them at all. And we had a chance to win that game at the end. We didn't get it done. The real story was their ability to be as physical as they were on their line of scrimmages.
Okay, so I thought that was a great line right there, and I paraphrased it earlier. The real difference was their dominance on the line of scrimmages, and you know, it's disappointing considering how much the Cowboys have invested in their offensive line. An offensive line coach got blown out for sucking last year at the bye. And
he tweets now.
Does he?
Does a lot of tweeting, Paul Alexander.
Does he have any thoughts on how the Cowboys are doing?
No, he just does a lot of breakdown stuff.
You know, but to say one of the two or three best backs in the NFL, I'm just going to call BS on this. If you want to put him in the top five or just outside the top five, I think that's okay. Or even if you wanted to put him outside the top 10, I could hear that. But I can't understand one of the top two or three. The reason Cole Beasley wasn't good enough is because he only made plays within 10 yards. Ezekiel Elliott has a bunch of runs over 10 yards, 24 of them, no runs of 20 yards or more. One of the justifications for getting Zeke was we can run it into the end zone from anywhere on the field with this guy. And for the first couple of years, he actually did that.
They couldn't run it for a first down last week.
Zero
times did you run for a first down.
Yeah, so that I don't get. Like, if you want to say Zeke's not a bum, Zeke's a good running back still, I can be like, oh, okay, I'll kind of get it. But there's a lot of sluggish activity and no big plays. You know, if you're going to pay a guy like that, you need big plays. We need to kind of take the gloves off and just call Ezekiel Elliott what it is, a massive disappointment right now at $12 or $15 million, or however you want to do that math. It is an epic fail for this front office to sign Ezekiel Elliott to that long of a contract and then have him run out there and do what he's done so far. I don't care about staying on, you know, hey, we got 4 yards, we got 5 yards. Oh, look at that, a bunch of 10-plus yard runs. All that's guaranteeing for the Cowboys. It's no coincidence they got all these yards, and for every 100 yards, you should have 7 points. There we go, another 450 yards and 21 points. Why? Because when you need drives to get you 7 first downs all the way down the field because your running back's not taking it to the house, you know, that is why these drives aren't adding up to points. Because he is no longer a playmaker. You gave him $15 million because he's supposed to be as dynamic and as impactful as a number one wide receiver. And right now, when it comes to making winning impacts, Dak and Amari Cooper are running complete circles around what Ezekiel Elliott's bringing to the table. And I think he can be a lot better because he is still young enough and athletic enough, but he's got to be dedicated Monday through Sunday. And right now, it feels like he starts to get ready for the game about 90 minutes before he has to head in. That's how it feels right now.
Yeah, and to your point, the danger of trying to lean on that as the way your offense is going to work, I just pulled up the third down conversion rates of NFL teams this year. There's one team over 50%. It's the Cowboys. at 51.4. It's the best offense in football. 51.4. So if you have to convert six or seven on a drive, how often is that going to happen? Somebody do that math.
Yeah, go
it's
ahead.
A coin flip if I'm going to convert, and I need it to land heads six times to get to the end zone.
Yeah.
Man, I just looking at this real quick, and there's some really good numbers on Zeke. The longs for the top 10 rushers in yards, when I look at their longs, here they are. 75, 84, 88, 59, 68, 81, 51, 27, 63, 58.
Yeah, nobody else is
getting
stopped.
Those are the top 10 running backs in the NFL in yards overall, and I just gave you their long for the year on their yard.
Zeke's is the 27?
Zeke's the 27. Your next lowest is 51 by Josh Jacobs.
Hey, if you play for the money, that's all you're going to ever get. And right now, that's where Ezekiel Elliott's entire career is going in a hurry. It's up to him to pull it out, and I think he has what it takes to accomplish that. But, you know, just like the Cowboys. Is winning football your number one priority right now? If the organization's number one priority isn't winning, how would you expect any of the players, any of the people under that leadership umbrella? What is it? Attitude reflects leadership or something like that?
Remember the Titans. I don't know if it's from something other than that, but I know it's from Remember the Titans.
Okay, I do know that coming up next, you're going to entertain our pants off, Jeff.
Oh, I absolutely am. I've got some awesome DAC numbers and good news if you like to hang out naked. It's next.
Okay, let's your pants off. Right on. Yes, the perfect segue for your deal.
Wow.
I know.
Accident.
That's synergy right there, brother. That's when you know you're doing something right.
Did you know shopping at Dallas Truck World, Southwest Kia, and Mesquite Mitsubishi, you work with the non-commissioned salesperson, y'all. Check them out today.
Thank you, Lucius. Coming up at 6 o'clock, we'll take a look at what you can see at 105throughthefan.com. Here's Jeff Kavanaugh.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Yep.
I forgot to tease it, but we got to do a little college football corner. Holy cow.
Yeah, that'd be very appropriate.
LSU over Bama, 46-41. And I'll tell you what, I spent this game, I was watching in the vicinity of David Hellman of DallasCowboys.com, an LSU fan. You don't know people's real selves until you watch a sporting event with them.
Where they really, really care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Mickey and Hellman. You know, they come on and they talk about the fans and they're so objective and like, you have the right perspective on it. And then they completely lose their bleep when it comes to college football.
I counted Hellman's cuss words in the first quarter. And I only counted real cuss words, not the kind of cuss words. I only counted the real ones. 51 in the first quarter. 17 of those were Fs.
That's low.
So he really taunts the other players when LSU does something good. And like holy cow, college football people are insane.
It was fun being in New Orleans because that was a big deal. I didn't know it'd be that big of a deal because I thought, well, the game's in Alabama. But then I got these explanations that from Baton Rouge and stuff, it's only an hour drive. So tons of people, especially for big LSU games on the road, will drive into New Orleans to party and then be in all the bars and places in New Orleans to watch LSU play football. So it was really fun.
So were you out and about?
Yeah, I was walking around, but then we sat down and we ate lunch, like a late lunch around kickoff time. So I watched most of the first half kind of in a restaurant bar area. And, I mean, it was intense. It was way more intense than around here. At least you can't really for college football. I know I'm not in Fort Worth a lot, but I don't think TCU fans are anywhere close to the passion that LSU fans are.
Shots fired at TCU. Tough break for you guys. Hellman jumped in the pool after they won.
I saw that
in all his clothes. Yeah, he did that. Yeah. Because before the game, he said,
that wasn't bad on Saturday. If he did it today, that would be really bad.
Yeah.
Oh, holy cow.
Yeah. Because we told him before the game, we're like, what if LSU's like up three scores? Because he kept looking at the clock leading up to the game. We're watching the other games like, only an hour left. Like he was dreading it. Like he was like, oh my God, I don't want this. I don't want this to start. I was like, what if they're up like three scores? And he was like, I'll rip my shirt off, run down the street to the nearest bar and have an El Chapo. It's a drink that they have there.
Okay.
And he's like, and have a party. When LSU got up three scores, there's a bunch of us sitting there like, Dave? And he was like, what?
Shirt off.
Remember three scores?
Chapo.
And he's like, I'm leaving my shirt on. And then he ran out of the apartment. He ran down the street. He did it, and he runs back. And I was like, you know they're going to lose if you don't at least show some tata. And so he pulled out a tipple, and he was like, all right, are we square? And we were. And they held on to win.
And that must be so exhilarating for an LSU fan.
Oh,
what's
God.
It been, a decade?
I think it's been
eight in a row.
Yeah. So LSU finally topples Alabama, and Joe Burrow, LSU's quarterback, was awesome.
Okay. Who's better? I think the if I have the first pick, if I'm the Bengals,
I'm trust the tape guy. I got to wait until I can watch the
and
tape.
And I know there's a way more that goes into it, and I don't think Tua T should be a second or third round pick, but I think the LSU quarterback, I think, is going to have a better career.
I think there's a decent chance that he becomes the number one overall pick. It'll be between Tua and Burrow won the day. Tua had his ankle all wrapped up, right. So I wonder if he was healthy, but he still threw for 400 yards, four touchdowns. But not the same completion percentage. Burrow was 31 of 39.
Don't forget to factor in the injuries.
Yeah, that's Tua's an ankle guy. He's an ankle guy. But
and I think in Texas, if we're going to say Winda instead of window, it should be Burra.
Joe Burra?
Joe Burra.
I like that. Joe Burra and Tua Tagovailoa.
You got it.
So, yeah, LSU wins. I bet tonight they'll do the updated college football playoff rankings. And LSU is going to jump Ohio State, I bet. It'll be LSU, Ohio State. Clemson was five. They're going to be three.
Yeah.
Because Penn State lost to Minnesota.
That was amazing.
Penn State was number four.
Happened.
Right. Minnesota's undefeated. So Minnesota will be in the top 10 tonight. I bet they'll be like number seven because they beat Penn State. They're undefeated. They now have a really good win on their resume. And if they win out, they'll be in the playoff.
Yeah.
They'll be undefeated. They'll be the Big Ten champ. It'll mean they've beaten everybody.
Okay.
But I don't know. Minnesota's got some serious wide receivers, though. I had not watched enough Minnesota. I just knew they had a cupcake schedule, and they'd blown out their last four. The four before that were close games against nobodies. So everybody was kind of like, Minnesota? Well, now it's Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah, for real Minnesota.
I know I'm going back to LSU-Alabama just because that was what I was 100% locked in on Saturday. I still think Alabama is going to make the Final Four. Do you think this will be the first time since they've done this that Alabama will not be in it? Haven't they been in it every time?
It's where I was going to go. That's the fun part because we're projecting tonight's top four. Tonight's top four is going to be, I believe, one LSU, two Ohio State, three Clemson.
Yeah.
Because four Penn State lost and Alabama lost. I think Alabama's going to be four.
Really?
I think they're going to be sitting at number four. They had a close loss to the team that's going to be number one. Georgia has wins against Florida and I'm missing another good win that they had. Georgia has more good wins than Alabama. Alabama has zero. They have beat zero teams that are currently ranked. And so here's what we're going to get down to. Do you want in the college football playoff the four most deserving teams or the four best teams? Because if you want the four best teams, you want Alabama because they are. If you want the four most deserving, it's going to be hard for them to make a case.
I think it becomes too difficult to separate they've been the champions before and keep getting to the championship game and how good are they right now.
Right.
I think it's too impossible for the human to remove that bias, right? So as you're weighing how good is Alabama, I don't know, man. Like, I want the committee just to stick with who you think is most deserving right now because I don't want to invite that kind of historical bias for programs.
I think the right way to do it is the four most deserving teams and not the four best teams, because you could, if you just went four best, you could have a situation where early on in the year you have major suspensions or major injuries and you lose a game or two and they're a two-loss team, but you're like, they are one of the four best teams, and that would mean you'd be putting in a two-loss team that isn't deserving, but you know they're one of the four best, but they had hiccups early on in the year. So four most deserving would be the way that I would try to vote this thing into.
And that still might include Bama for now. The
right.
four most deserving, they may be – I mean, here's the tough part. They're most deserving because of where they were ranked. But they've been beating the brakes off people, but they have not – they beat a ranked, I believe, at the time A&M team.
Yes,
but looking back,
23 or 24
right.
when I went to that game.
But now when you pull up their schedule and the results,
right.
no one in there is ranked. They do have an Auburn game left, so they have a chance for a good win.
Here's my next Alabama question. They still get all the five-star recruits that they want for defense, right? Because their defense...
This defense is not what it once was. They lost.
Yeah,
now they lost their stud middle linebacker
but
for the year.
They seem to do that every year. They have three to five guys that are in the first round and then like another two or three that are in the second round. And this year, it didn't seem like they replaced them that well.
This is the weakest their defense has been in a while. And maybe it has something to do with the fact that, hey, the SEC, you know, the super elite SEC that looks down at the Big 12, now that you play football like the Big 12 does, oh, people do score on you. When LSU, instead of just running into the line of scrimmage over and over again, and you beat them 12-3, and you're like, that's how we do it in the SEC! Well, do you still get to be that elite when LSU hung 46 on you when they started playing like the Big 12 plays? Is that what your defense might have been?
Okay,
if teams really played good offense?
I do want to hear about this nudist colony story, but I want to know from you, do you think this might be the end of Saban at Bama as far as the dominance to that level? This LSU thing, it's been building. This LSU thing's been building.
Tell me who their next quarterbacks are.
Okay.
Because LSU, it's a massive change when they brought Joe Brady from the Saints and they were like, all right, here's the spread. And it's like, I heard Marcus Spears. He was great this morning on, I think he was on the Mike Greenberg, ESPN, what is it, Get Up or whatever. And he was like, yeah, Joe Brady got there. And he looked around and he goes, oh, look at that receiver there. That's a 5-star. Oh, and you're a 5-star? Oh, you too. All of you. Get on the field. We're going to throw it to you. Yeah. Like, wow, what a novel concept this is. Hey. I got all these 5-star receivers. Let's feed them.
NFL talent everywhere.
Yeah.
Get some points.
All right, on to Naked Talk. It's not a nudist colony story, though. It's a story about a pilot. Our guy is a pilot. He was in his hotel room that overlooked Denver International Airport.
Okay.
And he was naked.
All right.
This is back in September of 2018, and employees said they saw him touching himself through the 10th floor window of his hotel room, right?
As they were flying, or as they looking at it from a tower?
Not sure where people said they saw him from.
Okay.
But they said that, and he got arrested for it. So he gets arrested, he gets in trouble, and they end up having to go to court. And his attorney, he's not going to be found guilty of anything. And he's getting paid $300,000 for wrongful arrest.
Nice.
Because his attorney apparently convinced the court, one, he didn't know he could be seen from outside, and two, you're allowed to be naked at the place that you're living.
Yeah.
So it just made me feel a lot better because I worry every day when I go outside because that's my first move every morning, especially when it's cold or it's raining. Because if it's cold or raining, my dog doesn't want to go outside. But I'm meant to leave to go to work.
Yeah.
So you have to go outside and go to the bathroom. But if I just open the door and stand there, she looks at me like, why would I leave the nice warm house if you're not?
Yeah, I've had to pee for 4 hours, but I'm staying right here, boss.
Right. So the new tradition is I lead the way.
Uh-huh.
I walk out there. I stand on the back patio and take care of business. And she looks for a second. She's like, all right, if you can do it, I can do it. But I've worried that somebody might somehow through like a crack between the boards and the fence might walk by and be like, holy cow, dong, dong, dong. And I might get arrested. And now I feel like I'm safe.
I think you're all right. Even if you're on the back patio, as long as you're not intentionally having people view you or engaged in autoerotic activity, you know, I think one of
those
things.
Does that count
at the
very end when you do the 2 or 3 shakes?
No, I don't think that's
not activity.
That's when you pull your skin back to make sure that.
Well, you do that at the very beginning because you don't want it to just go all over the place. Yes. You've got to unhood the anteater, of course.
I think to make your dog feel more comfortable, though, if it's having trouble, like in cold weather or wet weather, to go to the bathroom, but you're going to the bathroom, they're probably confused because you're standing up. If you got on all fours and then lifted your leg up while you were naked.
My dog's a girl. She does not lift her leg.
And peed that way. Oh, they do the extra squat?
Yeah, all the way down there. You should do that
when you pee outside.
Bad knees, man.
Just to see if it really helps her.
I'll try it. I'll try it tonight, and I'll send that out.
Put it on Twitter.
It'll be on my YouTube page at youtube.com/Jeff Cavanaugh.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.